If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
We want the dynamite from the post wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Man, we're all warmed up now.
Yes, we are. How was your day?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
It's amazing.
Get up to any craziness?
Yeah, I went out for a walk to the coffee shop. No, that's, I worked all day.
Wild.
I worked all day. That's what I did. I had to...
We heard how your day was. We heard you on air.
Did you watch any ECW the night the line was crossed today?
I did. Yes, I did. I watched the first half of the show, meaning I have the main event left to go, which is a whole hour, which I'm looking forward to, actually.
Yeah, I don't care. So today I went to I wanted to like grab a clip from the show. Mm-hmm. So I did what Wei and I do. We traveled to the US so that we could find a Peacock account that works, and we yes. may or may not like have dual access to one through our hookup. And I went to go get the clip, mm-hmm. but the show is at a specific point. I was like, oh, Wei's in the middle of watching this. So I logged out because I didn't want to mess up your spot of where you
please.
Are. I care so much, Wei, about you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, no, that wouldn't have been a bother at all. Please go do your thing.
It's like taking someone's bookmark out of their book.
Yeah. And it's okay. I don't mind. This is what we have to do when we're sharing an account like that.
Have you had any instances yet where Oscar has ever threatened you?
No.
Or he's gotten mad at you?
I don't think he knows enough words to threaten, at least not like just via a sentence like that. Yeah.
My daughter has never said anything like that to me. And then the other day we're walking home. And she wants to go to the convenience store to get a chocolate. And I was like, we're not going today. That's maybe the end of the week. We'll go. We'll get a treat at the end of the week. She's like, oh, like we're not going. She's like, well, then I'm going to punch you in the eyeball. I was very taken aback by this. She's never threatened me with anything. And then she threatens to punch me in the eye.
What was your response?
I laughed, but I was like, I should not be laughing about this because she's going to think this is like proper. This is something to joke around with. Like,
yeah.
You can't be punching anyone except me. Is what I told her. Can't be punching people at school.
Except me. So
I was like, it's fine to joke about this to me. But
oh, I see. You didn't let her punch you in the eye.
No. I wouldn't.
You gotta put that energy somewhere. Are you thinking of signing her up for kickboxing? MMA, you know.
Well, right now she's doing ballet, so that is the gateway to jiu-jitsu. So,
yeah, some would say. Sure.
Light on her feet, and we'll see how she progresses, whatever she wants to take up. All right.
Fascinating.
We will be crossing the line on Thursday on Rewind Away. Have you watched the whole thing, or do you still have some to go?
No, no, I still have the main event to go.
Okay, that's you weren't on the main event by around 3 this afternoon.
I was not. No,
but yes, we will be talking about a famous match in ECW history: Terry Funk, Shane Douglas, and the late Sabu going to have the first ever three-way dance in ECW's history at the ECW Arena. I cannot wait for our production critique from Waiting on 1994. ECW and its investment in a hard cam.
I don't know if there's much to critique. That's the thing. I mean, this is a very bare bones production from Eastern Championship Wrestling. This is the oldest ECW show I've ever seen. I think the most interesting thing for me has been to see the early incarnations of some of these names. See, look, like whoever, okay, RF Video made this DVD cover after the fact, but it does not feature this incarnation of Shane Douglas. This is a photo from Shane Douglas from, like, I don't know, 2000 or something like that. But to see Tommy Dreamer in all of his suspenders glory, Sandman wearing like a weird vest, just
the original Sheik.
Yeah, very bizarre and very, very interesting. This show also featuring the Tasmaniac.
The Tasmaniac.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He digressed in 1994. And we're also going to talk about Mike Awesome as well.
Oh, yes. Jesus. Yes, we will. Awesome, Mike Awesome.
Awesome, Mike Awesome. Yeah. All right, so that is coming up. PostWrestlingCafe.com on Thursday. We also had a big edition of Pollock and Thurston today where we went through all of the news surrounding the WrestleMania location change and some notes from Brandon's reporting on that story. We also discussed the John Laurinaitis being dropped as one of the defendants in the Janelle Grant case, which we also spoke about at the beginning of tonight's show, and problems that Triller is going through. And there are some significant ones. They have not made several SEC filings and have been basically threatened with like a delinquency note by the NASDAQ stock exchange, which they are traded on, and like their stock has plummeted over this last, it's been on a precipitous decline, but it is now trading at around 61 cents as well. So there's definitely cause for concern about the status of Triller. They were supposed to get this big influx of investment money that has not come to pass. And I mean, it's become a service that, especially in the wrestling front, but also for MMA, boxing, but especially pro wrestling, that you have, it's just become such a tool that you use, God, almost every day.
I certainly do. Yeah.
All right. All of that can be found at postwrestling.com. The final note is that Collision Course will be coming this weekend. It's just a question of when, because even AEW couldn't tell us when Collision will be this weekend. So what has to happen, tomorrow night is game 5 of the Knicks-Pacers series. If the Pacers win, the series is over, and Collision will air at its normal 8 Eastern time slot, but it will be live coast-to-coast on Saturday. If the Knicks force a game 6, then Collision will not air until late Saturday after the post-game show after the game. So it will be... it's sort of the double-edged sword that you will be going super late, but you also might get a bump in terms of your lead-in because of the NBA. But as a result, unfortunately, John Cena and Kate are at the mercy of the Pacers and Knicks, and this has left John Cena, a New Yorker, very conflicted, because if his Knicks lose, then he's in the clear, but he's going to have to either watch with his head or his heart tomorrow night.
Thank you, Cena and Kate, for always being so accommodating to AEW and Warner or TNT schedule. I don't know. I feel like at this point, maybe they should just commit to just a random time slot every single week for Collision.
Saturdays at 1 Eastern.
Sure. Yeah. And then sometimes it might be Tuesday at 11 a.m.
Does the whole 2 hours air on Saturday night? Because it will be a tape show.
I would think so from this point forward, I have to think.
On to tonight's show. WrestleTix reporting 3,611 tickets distributed at the El Paso County Coliseum in Texas, coming off of Double or Nothing. Our first segment, Tony Schiavone welcoming the Owen Hart Cup Foundation champion, Hangman Page, who is out with his belt and... Paige discusses how triumph is fleeting. It passes by quickly. And it's not about winning. It's what you do with that win that truly matters. He thanks Will Ospreay for the fight of his life and said that you dispelled my notion that you couldn't carry this company. You definitely can. But he says, winning is fleeting. And next year, there will be a new Owen Hart Cup winner. So he hands over the belt to Tony Schiavone.
Also a notable line in all this in him saying that for the past 2 years, he's struggled. And then he said, if I have to be honest, it was the past 3 years. And I think worth noting because we are almost 3 years to the day of that workers' rights promo, May 25th, 2022. So I have to think that line was a deliberate reference to Punk.
Yeah, I think in a roundabout way. I mean, you can extend it to the real life situation with Punk. You can also connect it to him losing the title to Punk as well, which coincided with like the lead up to Double or Nothing that year. So he said that this has always been about one thing, and that is the AEW Men's Championship. It's been hidden in a briefcase for the past 7 months, and it should be a shining light on these letters, AEW. And I make a promise to you, the people, that I will win this title and free it from the briefcase. This is a hell of a babyface promo from Hangman Page to start off the show. Mm-hmm. But then he is interrupted by Swerve, who comes out, and he airs a clip from the April 9th edition of Dynamite following Dynasty, when the Young Bucks had cost Swerve the match against Jon Moxley and gave their explanation on that Wednesday's Dynamite that they did it as a favor for their buddy Hangman Page. Swerve says, I had that match won, and it's funny how you now have a path to the title, and that was cost, that was taken away from me by your friends. So he states that the Bucks came out that night, but I also noticed you were out in the ring that night too. I'm calling this collusion. Paige says,
AEW collusion.
AEW collusion. Paige, you promised that I would never become champion again, so I'm going to ask you straight up, did you do this to me? And Paige takes a long look at Swerve and says, if I would have done that, I would have just done it myself. I've done it before. Swerve doesn't buy this and says that Hangman is full of shit. So out comes our referee, Will Ospreay. And as the three of them are in the ring, this crowd is buzzing. Like, mm-hmm. They are like,
they're chanting
like,
holy shit, just to see these three.
Just
in the
to
ring
see
together.
These three who, yeah. You know, you could, you know, are obviously to the audience, like the big three at the moment.
Yep.
So the audience is all heated here, and Ospreay looks at Swerve and says, you've taken care of me since I was 20. You're like my older brother, but I have to tell you, you're wrong about Hangman. Hangman had a choice on Sunday. He walked up the aisle, came back, and instead of attacking me, he shook my hand. I saw in his eyes, he cares about this place. And it's the same feeling I had 1 year ago when you beat me and you did the same to me after beating him after the Forbidden Door match that the two of them had. Mm. And he says, people are starting to believe in us again, and said, it's not you and it's not me. It's him, in reference to Hangman. He is the one that has earned this shot to go take this belt back from Jon Moxley, and says, if we work together, and as soon as this is suggested, Swerve just knocks the mic out of Ospreay's hand and says he will never trust Hangman and storms off as the crowd boos. And then Hangman basically gives the same message to Ospreay. He will never accept help from Swerve. And I think this is a super cool dynamic for the next several weeks, that you have 7 weeks to build up All In. And this is a really cool kind of like, can these two get on the same page, and Ospreay kind of caught in the middle here, that I think probably suggests like Ospreay being very much tied to the hip of Swerve in this lead up to All In, whether that's those two aligning to face the Young Bucks. I do like the idea of Swerve and Ospreay either together or even as opponents as well. Like, there's a lot of ways you could go about this, but that's a big,
that would be a great All In match.
Yes.
Swerve versus Ospreay. Feels
exactly
big.
Yeah. So I thought this segment was excellent at the start of the show. And I like the fact that we have all this time. We didn't need to put Hangman and Moxley in a ring together. Like, you have a lot of time to build this up. I thought this was a great kind of kickoff to your lead up to All In.
I thought it was such a strong follow-up to Double or Nothing. You know, I think these moments coming off of a really hot show with high stakes attached to it and a big winner coming off of the show is so important to capitalize on. And this episode, I would say overall, had really a strong feeling of feeling like a Raw after Royal Rumble or like a Raw after WrestleMania. You know, like it felt like we were just like supercharging, like whatever momentum is headed towards the biggest show of the year. This segment at once, I think, helped celebrate Paige's win while also immediately shifting our attention to the greater mission at hand, which is, you know, the rush towards the finality of this Death Riders saga, right? What I didn't expect, though, was that we would get this like wonderful character interplay between these three. You know, like there was maybe some discussion to be had coming off of Anarchy in the Arena due to Kenny's outfit and also just due to some of the closing scenes about like Anarchy in the Arena being like AEW's Avengers. But I mean, I guess with all due respect to Kenny's outfit, the big three are here. You know, this is your Cap, Iron Man, and Thor in Will Ospreay, Swerve, and Hangman Page. And the Avengers are never what they are without a little bit of Civil War to create some lovely tension for all of us to see them eventually bond together. And this Page-Swerve feud, which I think is safe to say is like, you know, AEW's greatest rivalry, to be able to explore that as the centerpiece of this story heading towards All In just makes the build towards All In that much more significant. It's not just about Hangman toppling the Death Riders. Now we're going to see resolution for Paige and Swerve in the lead up to that as well. So you're just like bring two of now the biggest stories in AEW's history together in this run up to All In. And I never expected Ospreay to really play the role that he does, but he continues to like almost represent like the consciousness of the public here in his ability to state facts. It's not me, it's not you, it's him. Like, basically, he's the voice of the narrator telling us Hangman Page is the main character of AEW at the moment. And I also loved his line where he said, listen to the crowd, you know, people are starting to believe in us again, which is, I think, very factual when you just kind of take the temperature of like the audience reception to recent AEW shows. Like, he is basically confirming and reaffirming to a crowd that might not necessarily be as aware that momentum is very strong with the product right now and that audiences are enjoying the show again. So I thought this segment accomplished so much and made me that much more interested in the build towards All In and AEW by extension.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting ways to go with this. Like, this could be our closing visual of All In at the end, where it's like the triumph. Like, this could be a way to set up the challenger for Forbidden Door at the O2 Arena between Swerve and Ospreay. All these different avenues you can go in that are really interesting. And I think that's as much about, you know, a lot of this revived interest is these characters, but it's also your post All In scene too. Like, you have MJF in the background that is hunting for this belt. You still have, you know, Kenny in the background, who's likely set up with Okada, but you do have like
Callis family, Fletcher. Like, there's a lot of depth, not just in this main mix, but beneath it too. Yeah. It puts this company in really strong position, especially if the strength of the storytelling is as good as what we are seeing right now here, at least in a segment like this. So we also have to admit, like, for all the faults of the Death Rider story, if Tony had ended Moxley's run earlier, like I think so much of the audience might have demanded, at certain points, we wouldn't have a heel threat on the level that I think a story like this requires. You know, like, we need a Roman Reigns to Hangman Page's Cody. We need a Thanos to, you know, these Avengers, right? And the Death Riders, I think, successfully represent that.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows you want the best for Dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
Moxley, Gabe Kidd, and Marina Shafir against Mark Briscoe, Willow Nightingale, and Speedball Mike Bailey. The Death Riders roll up in their truck and enter the arena. And then all six brawl at the beginning. Briscoe does his Sabu point before leaping off the chair to the floor. And they have the advantage on Briscoe throughout the commercial break. Shafir hits a release German onto Bailey. And then Yuta slides a chair in for in. To distract the referee, sending Bailey off the top, and that allows Kidd to put Bailey through the timekeeper's desk as we go through a second commercial. Really strong crowd reaction here from the El Paso crowd. Bailey beats the count in. I think this was a count of 250 that he made it in at 249. Gabe Kidd on multiple occasions spit at Willow as the announcers explain how much Willow hates Gabe Kidd. And we see a shot of Chris Statlander watching from the back, and the baby faces hit successive flips and dives to the floor. And then Claudio shows up to stop a J-driller by Mark, and Commander pops up and does a casual rope walk into a dive onto Claudio as they will be taking on each other on Collision. And
The most out of nowhere, like, amazing dive from just
Commander. I'm just hanging out.
I like Commander matches, but like, I wouldn't be mad if Commander's role in AEW from this point forward was just occasionally come in to like rope walk and deliver a dive.
He just subdues run-ins. Yes.
Oh my god, and it's amazing. And like, the perfect timing of like him executing the dive immediately followed by the graphic in the corner. Like, clearly there's some, speaking of collusion, Commander was working with somebody in production here with the Chiron, you know?
So Briscoe managed to roll up on Moxley. He kicks out, and then it's Moxley with the paradigm shift, putting Mark in the bulldog choke. Marina takes Willow down into mother's milk, and then Gabe Kidd subdues Bailey as Aubrey calls off the bell, or calls off the match, ringing the bell at 18 minutes and 43 seconds. As you know, we had a lot stacked onto this show. I was not expecting a near 20-minute opener here after we got like a 15-minute talking segment at the beginning of the show, but they did. They got everything in.
I think in terms of like star power, like, I think the Death Riders almost like warrant something like that, you know. Like, we're also taking into account commercial breaks that are breaking up these matches as well, right? You look at the match on paper and you kind of immediately know what this is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a rehab for the Death Riders, but in doing so, I thought it was like they picked a great three people in your mid-tier baby faces in Willow, Briscoe, and Speedball to put in this position, because I think they're all three of them are coming off of like significant moments on the pay-per-view. Like, giving them this airtime, even in a losing effort, for one thing, they are incredibly lovable, so anybody beating them down is going to make for a great reaction for the heels. But I also know that because, like, the overarching story is something between the Death Riders and Paige, it makes these sort of, like, you know, B-level Avengers, I'm invested in even seeing them do well, you know, against the Death Riders. And I'm invested in seeing the Death Riders not beat them up too much. So I think it's good use of them. Even Commander, you know, got a great spot here. And Gabe Kidd, I think, works perfectly with the Death Riders in terms of personality.
Yeah, I thought for the time they had, I thought Moxley and Bailey worked gelled really well together as well. Like, that's a connection we haven't seen too often. The Hurt Syndicate were just limited to this video package where they called Sunday a historical occasion. It was their fifth title defense and the debut of the young genius MJF in the Hurt Syndicate. MJF then cuts the rest of the promo that he will make sure these tag belts aren't going anywhere. They will all be strapped in gold as he's coming for his triple B, and you're going to find yourselves face down in a puddle of your own piss and blood.
Mm-hmm. The dynamic between Bobby and MJF, I think, continues to be the most interesting thing here.
We had the most awkward, like, arm around his shoulder as Lashley's, like, it was just so awkward.
Every mention of, like, MJF going for the triple B, like, I think they deliberately cut away to Lashley and his expression being like, yeah, I don't know about that, you know, because we all know ultimately his goal is probably the world championship. So, again, the question is who's going to turn on whom first, who is really using the other, and is Bobby Lashley simply waiting for maybe Max to win the championship so he could take it off of him. I don't know. These still continue to be the most interesting things about this entire pairing, I think.
Ricochet does a promo. He is on a quest for gold, but he needs a group, a crew of loyal subjects to help on his quest. So it looks like we are getting another faction, and one would suggest that the utilization of the word crew was probably to lead you in the direction of at least two.
Yeah, unless he's thinking of the three live crew.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Might be very hard contractually, but he does have one of the three live crew.
Billy Gunn? Was that Conan?
Yeah, that's right. Conan. Yeah, Billy Gunn was, well, maybe, yeah, Conan's not going to be available.
Billy Gunn was VKM.
VKM, yeah.
Yeah.
great faction.
Classic. I think, this Ricochet character is certainly strong enough now to lead a faction. I thought he'd be just inserted into the Elite because I loved his chemistry with the Bucks, but I'm perfectly fine with this, more to go around. I think the crew work great in terms of personalities with Ricochet. I almost feel, though, like they would need a heavy if that was the case, because all three of them working like a cruiserweight style almost feels like a little bunch of the same thing. But, I mean, obviously they can make that work, too.
Megan Bain and Penelope Ford against Harley Cameron and Anna Jay, who I have a feeling these four watched Penta and Chad Gable and decided, you know what? We can do better than that. So it was to the death in this no DQ match. Everyone comes out with weapons and we just get into a big series of brawls. There are chairs brought out from under the ring. Anna Jay and Cameron have a pipe and 2x4 that they double team Bane with weapon shots, but she won't go down and then takes Cameron and Jay down with a double clothesline. A table is brought out, but then the heels get their own table during the break, and it's Bane with a running Death Valley driver putting Anna Jay through the table in the corner. Cameron is in to make the save on the cover. So Bane and Cameron are on the edge of the apron. Cameron tries for a sunset bomb onto Bane, but it's Jay hitting a chair shot, releasing the hold of Bane on the rope, so she gets powerbombed through the table. Bane gets back to her feet, and then she lifts up Cameron, almost like a like in a full Nelson, and drops her face first onto the steps, and her nose just got crushed here as she came up and her nose had exploded.
Yeah, this, I guess if we're just maybe strictly talking about like visuals, I mean, this felt like her Britt Baker moment, right? Broken nose, bloodied face, and just
a lot of broken noses in the last week.
Who else?
Well, Chelsea on Friday.
Oh.
Or no, Saturday. That was Saturday.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Yes. So Cameron, she's getting checked on by the trainer, and then she refuses help and gets back into the ring, and she's doing like this spirited comeback. Mm-hmm. And like there's some reaction to it, but I was hoping the crowd was just going to take this to another level, and I did not get that sense. And then we saw Anna Jay deliver a gory bomb to Ford onto a chair, and Bane makes the save, and Bane hits Fate's Descent onto the chair, and this is when Anna Jay rolls out of the ring, and she's being checked on by Doc Sampson, and that's pretty much the end of Anna Jay in this match. They lift up Cameron for a doomsday device, and Penelope Ford, I guess, I don't know how close of a look she got, but I'm imagining she got to this top turnbuckle and saw her face and was like, I don't want to do any more damage to this woman's face with a clothesline. And she totally missed Harley Cameron. This was the doomsday phantom device, as she just whiffed over top and Cameron just went down and they pinned her in 11 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if like a different camera angle would have made it look better or worse. Anyway,
you saw the arm like go through like above her, like it was so clear she made no contact here. And yeah. I mean,
if there is concern for safety, like you can't really blame somebody. Safety kind of comes first. What a violent match that I was not expecting on this particular show. Both Jay and Cameron looked really beat up here by the end. But man, I'd be lying if I said it didn't grab me into the match that much more. Like, I thought it kind of worked really well with the match. The idea of Megan Bain being this just like vicious monster beating up these like two poor, you know, women here, it added like a level of concern and realism that I think that definitely drew you in more into the match. And I think it for Harley Cameron, like somebody who's just been like comedic in 99.9% of her like pro wrestling appearances, drawing this little bit of blood and like having this little bit of fire suddenly made me take her more seriously than I ever have. So I don't know if that was necessarily like the intent coming out of this match, but I definitely think like this match, unintentionally or intentionally, made me see both Cameron and Jay in a much more serious light than just like the tits and asses group. And I hope that's something that they can run with after this.
Yeah, they didn't do the driving the opponent's face into the ass spot that they did on Sunday. So yeah. I don't think this match called for it. But you're right. Like, you get like this was hardly like a smooth match, but you can take something from this where you give a bit more of an edge to these to Cameron and Jay after mm-hmm. they've just been destroyed by, you know, your monster of the division in Megan Bain. And I think honestly, like Harley Cameron, she's certainly not at the peak that she was earlier this year, but she's still a character people get into. And I think teaming with Anna Jay, it's a way that you can get, like, I think if she was just on her own, it would be a lot more sporadic that you would see her just where television time is dispersed. And these two teaming together, I think it could be a benefit to them to gain that experience together in a tag setting rather than, you know, Harley Cameron has, you know, she's done very well for her experience level in a lot of these singles roles. And mm-hmm. I mean, she is someone that it's very clear she just dives headfirst into whatever she is given to, like this tag team. Like,
literally in this match. Yeah. I think whatever they were doing as a pairing leading up to this, I think maybe was a decent way of introducing them. But now I think we have seen glimpses of the key to actually taking them to the next level. And again, it's not just about cutting promos about tits and asses. It's about like showing babyface fire and like a will to actually like, you know, win and succeed. You know, the audience already likes them. AEW is a show, is a promotion where like baby faces get over because of how hard they wrestle, right? And I just hope that that's the direction we could see from these two going forward. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world, no minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Monet is showing driven up into the back of the arena in a lowrider, where she's in the back seat just holding this belt up. I'm hoping that she had this belt up for like a half hour drive down the freeway.
This was way more awkward than I think it was intended to be. Like, I think they needed a crowd around her cheering her. Okay, first of all, like, obviously, yes, lowrider, El Paso, Eddie, get it, right?
But could, like, she have not just come out for the final segment in this lowrider? Like, wouldn't that have been a bit cooler than this?
I don't think they're set up to drive the car into the arena, I'm assuming. Like, okay. But yeah, like, obviously, like, in front of a crowd, this would have come across.
This just looks
better.
Like, we're in the back of a construction site here, right by the forklift.
It's just like, yeah, like, we're driving to a parking lot. She's holding up the belt like this for whatever reason. And then, the announcers aren't, like, making any noise. So it's just, like, awkward silence.
Then we had the impromptu trios title match. Earlier in the show, we just had the ops will be in action. So I'm just expecting, like, we're going to have the non-entrance and it's just three local guys that are in the ring. Oh no. It was time for the frat house backed by Jacked Jameson. And they got a video of the frat house, which consists of Preston Vance, Griff Garrison, and Cole Carter, getting into town last night and going off to a local bar and getting hammered the night before with their trademark phrase, win or lose, we booze.
Oh my god,
dude, when these guys came out, this was our second coming of like prime Chase U.
I'm perfectly fine to admit that I have not seen a single second of Ring of Honor, okay, and clearly the genesis of what might be the greatest stable of jobbers that I've seen in quite some time. This is awesome. If the role of ROH is to create like great jobber staples with
this
like
is fully, everything the Spirit Squad should have been. They should have been asshole frat guys,
like fully, these fully realized characters with like a logo and just like like videos and everything. I'm there for it. I mean, these guys were very entertaining and very easy to hate, you know, upon first impact.
Jack Jameson is like, he's the glue to this whole thing. He gets onto the mic and he shouts out El Paso. And last night we were getting hammered at Shifty's Dive. And I was just so enamored with this whole segment that I had to look up this place. Shifty's Corner Dive, which is open till 2 a.m. every night in El Paso. I looked up some of the Yelp reviews just to get a sense of this. It's definitely got like a throwback feel. Like you have to go and it's like... they've got this like weird setup to make your reservation and then they let you in and it's a total like throwback, very high on their specialty drinks that they do. One person wrote, I love this place. L-O-V-E. Our barista was knowledgeable, flexible, and super crafty. She catered to our palates, and even though we ordered drinks from the menu, she made alterations to make them more personalized to our liking. And there were a lot of positive reviews, but I immediately went to the negative ones to see what could be a bad experience at this particular Shifty's Dive. I visited not a long time ago as a date. I truly love the live music, although it sucks you can't see the artists since they sit you in a secluded area. The music is not heard equally throughout this place, unfortunately. Also, our server Jordan was acting as if I was not there. I can count the amount of times she looked at me. I had to nearly get up every time I wanted her attention before she could run away from the table from asking my date what they wanted. She was rude at times. Not sure if she was having a bad day. I will not be returning. It's expensive. So I'd rather go where I'll be treated nicely. Do yourselves a favor and don't go. But the best one, only 2-star rating, because one of the servers delivered a French 75 and named it as such when they brought the drink. I responded, no, I ordered a bee's knees. His response, yeah, I don't know why I said French 75. Good, as long as it's not because I don't want a French 75. He rapidly walked away. I took a sip. It was a French 75. I roll my eyes and advise the actual server. She brought me a bee's knees. It had a hair on the rim. No joke, this was the second time this night that someone left their DNA on my order. What the hell? So she apologizes after and sometime later brought a replacement cocktail.
Wow.
I would still go. It sounds like they do a banana old-fashioned that is to die for. So that would be my recommendation if anyone's going to Shifty's. On to the match.
I'm Jack sure the Jameson, Frat House will be getting some free drinks after tonight.
They could be. Jack says he's looking for their next member, and he calls the guys in El Paso weak and skinny, and the women are fat and ugly. But we're leaving here as the new trios champions. We could only hope. Garrison tags in, and Shibata destroys him with a baseball slide dropkick and chops. Jameson gets involved using the paddle to the back of Hobbs. He no-sells this and sends him into orbit. And then Hobbs proceeds to kill all of the pledges with spine busters, then hits one to Vance. And then Cole Carter comes off the top, and not since NXT was this man murdered in such fashion as he is destroyed with the spine buster in 3 minutes and 13 seconds. But great segment.
Yeah. Put the Frat House into the main event of next year's All In.
Just give me vignettes of these guys every Saturday on Collision, and that would be the draw for Collision.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I think they are the perfect thing to put up against the Ops, who you just want to see beat up, you know, guy like a stable like that. I thought it was a great TV squash match, you know. Easy to understand, easy to hate heels, a satisfying beatdown here that made Hobbs look great. Hobbs continues to feel like the project of all of them here. And I think like maybe also specific focus put on him as the sort of the counter to what Hook probably is supposed to be to continue to drive whatever Hook story should take place eventually. So no follow-up from Hook here, but we can also assume that they will tell that story in the weeks to come.
Maybe he becomes a pledge.
He joins the frat house. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Renee brought out Jamie Hayter. So sometimes we will see performers have to come out and they have to so make it obvious what career dilemma they are going through. She certainly conveyed this as much as she could walking down the aisle. And she gets into the ring and Renee says, "You didn't know where your career would go if you lost this match. Well, you lost, so what's going to happen?" And before Jamie can answer, the lights go out. Excalibur is apologizing to us because clearly this is a power outage that only happens like once every 3 weeks in AEW.
I don't think he ever needs to apologize. Like at this point, he's better off saying, "Well, who's going to show up? Because something usually happens when the lights go out."
Is that Black Adam? Don't worry, we're still on the air. You're going to see this. Or else it'll be on the app. And then Tekla appears and she attacks Jamie Hayter, lays her out, and we get the story that Tekla was fired from Stardom. Well, they don't even say Stardom. She was just fired from her last company.
Did
for
they not say Stardom?
They didn't say Taro Okada as the person that she attacked, but yeah, that was the storyline, and here she is to feud with Jamie Hayter. It was very brief. I mean, she was kind of just in and out here, laid her out, did like the spider walk, and that was her introduction.
I thought the timing on the attack, whether it be just like maybe the camera, like being able to catch it cut to the attack a little bit better. That timing probably could have been finessed a little bit better. But otherwise, like it was, I thought it was a decent debut. You know, I almost felt like a little brief to be so impactful, but for a first week, I thought it was perfectly fine. That spider thing, like that spider walk looked really cool. She looks really cool. So good introduction overall.
Video aired on Mystico and Adam Cole versus Kyle Fletcher for the TNT Championship. Cole sends him off the apron and he goes for the Panama Sunrise onto the floor, but it's stopped as Trent and Rocky Romero run out to block. So Paragon comes out. They fight to the back. Fletcher ends up super kicking him and then he kills Adam Cole with this apron bomb. And Cole goes down on the floor, and
he was not doing
pro wrestling selling.
They missed the apron. Like he hit either almost the side of the ring, and just man, it looked so
he was down
brutal.
On his back, and the referee is checking on him. I think this is during the commercial break, but we're still watching it, and it's like, man, he was Jesus, look at this,
so
brutal. And we're talking about Adam Cole here too, where it's like extra concern for this, but I mean. Continued the match, and he also did an angle backstage afterwards. So hopefully, like this just looked really nasty. Oh, awful. Look at this. Yeah, this awful. Was brutal. Yeah. So Fletcher is in control for a long time. The crowd was chanting for Cole really loudly. Fletcher lands this big running boot in the corner, but it's Cole who comes back with a last shot, hits the Panama Sunrise. The knee pad comes down, and as he's going for the boom, Josh Alexander runs in, and we do the DQ at 9:34 as the two of them are beating down on Cole until Brody King comes out, and that would segue into the next match. But kind of an unsatisfying finish to this one, but hopefully
they're doing a rematch.
Yeah, I think that you're going to have Adam Cole probably continuing here with the Don Callis family and going through various members here.
Yeah, yeah. I think like this like TNT title level is like where Kyle Fletcher should be right now. It was a strong match, you know, that I think garnered like some pretty strong crowd reactions thanks to Don Callis and I think the strong heel work of Kyle Fletcher. I'm so concerned for Adam Cole, man. And just him getting hurt. I don't know if I can take another Adam Cole injury for the rest of my wrestling watching days. You know what I mean?
I don't know if he could either. I don't think he's looking for another injury.
So maybe we'll talk about the post-match segment coming off of this as well, because it was Fletcher complaining about Callis bringing Josh Alexander in.
He said he didn't need anyone's help to beat Adam Cole, and then Cole finds Fletcher, and they have a pull-apart brawl where Adam Cole yells, quote, "I will kill you."
Yeah, for missing the apron. Taking me out for another few months, potentially. They also mentioned on commentary how these two were involved in the opening match of the first Wembley show. If you remember, it was Aussie Open versus Cole and MJF.
Right.
And boy, like, no, like, their fortunes have certainly changed, both of them, you know, from that show to here.
Josh Alexander and Brody King comes out of the last match. And so this was Alexander working on the shoulder throughout the whole match. He rammed it into the post, and that's his focus here. King would stop him on the edge, applies the choke, but Josh then snaps the arm and Germans him onto the edge. And we see Brody recover with the running cross body to Josh in a chair against the barricade. After missing a cannonball, Josh goes to the ankle lock, and then he goes for this arm trap German suplex. And he gets Brody up, and Brody just comes right down on top of Josh's face. And the next time we see Josh, he is more blood on this show. I mean, there was... You know, there was the concern about like people being hurt from Double or Nothing. This was hardly the show that anyone was taking it easy, or just some like freak stuff too in this case. So he's all bloody. Alexander then gets his knees up. He goes for the moonsault, and King gets his knees up, and it's Brody with the lariat using the bad arm and lifts up Josh for the Gonzo Bomb in 14 minutes and 13 seconds. So Brody King
Gonzo Bomb too, man. Oh, just. You have to wrestle very, very, very aggressively in AEW. Like, it's a very tough style, all of these guys.
Well, wait, it's playoff season. You know, you're up against...
It's always playoff season, though. Like, it never ends.
Well, I mean, they're up against the playoffs. They got to be going to all measures.
Right.
So... Brody advances to the four-way with Kenny Omega, and then they showed this close-up. And, dude, this cut above Josh's right eyebrow, I would imagine he's getting stitched up here. Like, this looked a pretty significant cut that he had, and looked like a total freak thing that just the German, the way he landed, like, that looks to be just to cut him open here. But, yeah, this not going to look nice tomorrow.
Yeah, this might get us flagged showing this, but
great.
Yeah.
So.
Brutal, yeah. Brutal.
I mean, he's Canadian. He bleeds red. That's all we're emphasizing.
And he'll take advantage of the healthcare, I'm sure. I think Alexander's heel work was very strong here. Like,
I like this match.
He's not being booked in a, like, he's in a book position, sort of like bottom rung on the Callis family, kind of the one to lose matches like this. But getting the chance to perform in ring, like, is telling the audience who he is and how talented he is. He's hanging there in there with everybody, and you could put his name up with anybody, and it'll feel like an attractive match.
And it would seem, based on this, that we have like this international four-way for next week. Like, we have Brody is the U.S. representative, Kenny from Canada. Then I think everyone assumes that Claudio will be advancing over Commander, and then you'll have your Mexican representative as well. And and they're taping as we speak, so we don't have results yet. But Saturday's Collision, what they have announced are those two matches to determine the other participants: Sky Blue against Mina Shirakawa, and a six-man with Konosuke Takeshita, Trent and Rocky Romero against Tomohiro Ishii, Roderick Strong, and Kyle O'Reilly, happening sometime on Saturday.
Sometime on Saturday. Yep.
It's happening at 8 o'clock, or like, okay, most are going to watch on Sunday morning. That would probably be the answer. Mercedes Moné comes out for the final segment, and she's on the mic. She's by herself. She talks about her hero, Eddie Guerrero. And this is crazy. They started chanting Eddie. Did you notice this?
In El Paso? Wow.
Yeah. They chanted his name. Yeah. They remembered Eddie. Tony Storm comes out next. And this has been promoted as the first time they meet. Moné says that the AEW fans, they're tired of black and white. They're ready for a champion full of color. Storm rebuts, stating that you arrived 441 days ago on a show named after you. You have won titles, you've made history, and remained undefeated, but you have never spoken a word or even looked at me. But you told Anthony Khan... his full government name. This was the one match that you wanted. What took you so long? Moné preaches patience. She is the standard, the blueprint, the revolution. It's about me and my legacy. Storm says, well, I am the Tony Storm of professional wrestling. And it's just back and forth here. The two are just like one-upping each other's lines. Moné is not the boss anymore. She is a CEO. I've beaten the best around the world, and I will be. And you and I will have the greatest women's match of all time. So this is a
high bar.
you know, she's...
Is the greatest women's match of all time? Who are they directly competing against, in your opinion?
Well, are they competing with the greatest match of all time? Because that took place 5 years ago at with Edge and Randy Orton.
Oh, well, this is the women's version of
that. Greatest women's match of all time. Yeah, yes. This is a... Not hedging their bets here. Storm says we had similar backgrounds, struggling on the indies. We rose up. We won trophies. We were given flowers. But when it wasn't enough, both of us left it all behind to follow our hearts and became who we are meant to be in AEW. Mercedes says how... She says, you want all the titles, Mercedes. I only need one. I have lived, cried, bled, and died for this. So if you want to ride the money train through the Tony Tunnel, I just hope you can get deep enough. And this did nearly break Mercedes. And Monet says that even your hips are not wide enough for the money train. Storm then says that at All In Texas, there will be some young girl watching us, and they're going to see that match, and they're going to say to themselves, holy shit, these bitches are crazy. And then she'll find out who the better woman is. And Monet is the greatest of all time, but unfortunately for you, I am timeless. Mercedes says, there comes an end. There comes a time when it all comes to an end. We will face each other at All In. They shake hands, and they go face to face. Storm gives her a sniff. And then we get a Moneymaker attempt and a Storm Zero attempt, neither of which are hit, as Monet rolls to the floor. And we ended things. I thought this was a bit of a wink and a nod to that Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar right before Mania, where they did the dance-off at the end.
I was thinking more Gotch Hockenschmidt.
Yeah, they did a dance-off too. Yeah, even with the bad knee involved there. But yeah, I thought this was a... entertaining segment that these two had, and as much as it reads for comedy, they made this feel like a really big serious match at the end of it, but utilizing the Tony Storm character here.
Well, if it was completely void of comedy, there'd be something wrong, you know, like ultimately this is entertainment, and both, well, Tony primarily, but also Mercedes, they're both incredibly entertaining characters. I thought this was a hell of a main event segment, and I think to me, it affirms Khan's decision to make Monet the Owen Cup winner, because I don't know if this sort of like big fight feel would have been possible with anybody else on the roster. Monet, I think, you know, her speaking continues to be the weakest point, we could say, of her abilities. But I thought her lines were good here, and I thought they were capably delivered here. And her aura and her presence continued to feel very grand. Tony Storm is a character that is so fully realized and so comfortable in her own skin. She is just amazing to watch on the microphone. I would say as much as, you know, her in-ring, every word out of her mouth feels very deliberate and very well delivered. I was particularly impressed by the restraint she showed here in how little comedy actually there was for most of this. You know, her prior runs, almost every other line felt like it was supposed to be a sexual innuendo of some sort. This one was actually kept mainly serious, save for like the Monet train Tony Tunnel line, which I thought was very well inserted, no pun intended, towards the end here. But I also in particular really like how they are continue to put AEW over a little here, in this case reminding the audience that this is the place where both of them were able to realize their true potential. And I think that sort of like pro company sentiment is something WWE does really well, something ECW did really well even in 1994, and it's something that I think AEW can use a lot of right now. And there's truth to all of it when you think about it hard enough.
Yeah, so I thought that for tonight's show coming out of Double or Nothing, like it really did it. The major focus was the big two matches so far announced for All In Texas. And I thought this was a good like chapter one in this setup for the two big title matches and then the rest taking shape. But no Kenny Omega on this show, no Kazuchika Okada on this show. I mean, those were some omissions on this week's show at least. But you are going to have Kenny next week. And we also think go ahead.
Well, I was going to say like, Kenny was involved, Okada was involved, but they're not the people I was thinking about most coming off of Double or Nothing. The people I was thinking about most coming off of Double or Nothing were Paige. Well, Paige Ospreay. You can argue Storm. You can argue Monet and Hayter. Even Swerve to an extent. And those guys all got featured time here.
One thing I would say is that at the end of this show, I could imagine a lot of people ending the show having no idea that next week's show is 4 hours long. They've announced one match.
I think that's for the best. I don't know if that's as much of a draw as it is a deterrent.
Well, it's an interesting question why they're trying this. I guess obviously it's an experiment and we'll see how it does. But
like, is it up to them or was it like, do we know, you know?
Well, it's basically avoiding Collision getting like thrown around into some random slot. Like, let's just do it back to back. And we're going to do this 2 weeks in a row where this will be in lieu of Collision airing later that week. Mm-hmm. It's an experiment. Like, we'll see. Like, maybe it turns out that, you know, for TNT's sake or TBS's sake, if they can keep this audience for 4 hours, that's a nice feather in their cap. But I just thought that there would be more to announce for next week. All we know right now is this four-way for next week.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder how much of this show they even had booked maybe prior to this evening. Like, there weren't too many.
Pretty much all the announcements came out today. I mean, up until this morning, they had only announced Alexander and Brody King, Hangman on the show, and the face-to-face with Mercedes and Toni Storm. Like, all the matches were pretty much announced, like, late today.
Yeah. So would you expect next week's edition of Collision from 10 to 12 to do better than most collisions?
Yes.
Is that a fair assumption? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Even up until midnight, even that late.
I don't know. I don't know how a Wednesday night, like if you were to tell me Collision on its own would air 10 to 11 on a Wednesday night, like it's really late for some people in the middle of the week. Again,
but with a Dynamite lead in, that changes things, right?
Yeah, but I think this four-way, it's gonna be like, how much time do you guys want?
One hour.
It would not surprise me. Yeah. It would not surprise me if they
It could sustain an hour though. Like, I don't know if the star power is so strong in the four way, but yeah. See.
Maybe they need Shane Douglas.
Yes, maybe. And only just the hard cam. Just on the camera.
That would be the best. Maybe they should wait for this till they go to the 2300 arena.
Oh yeah.
The hard cam edition of Dynamite.
Yeah, I think AEW is in tremendous shape right now. Like, they have so many like hot programs up and down the card across various divisions. The men's and women's lead programs are very strong right now. And you just have such a strong cast of characters, just even like in supporting roles. Not to mention the quality of the wrestling seems to be as great as it ever has been.
I think creatively, they're in a very good spot at the moment. And this is sometimes the challenge of a lot of bookers and, like, if you have that short patience, sometimes it can be frustrating when you feel you're putting together a really good product, but it's not being reflected yet. There's always going to be that lag of your television audience picking up. The first sign will be ticket sales. I think that is the first, like, that is an audience member that is spending money and coming to a show that is being attracted by the current product. I'm really interested to watch in this next couple of weeks to see if there is like notable movement for All In ticket sales. Like, we got the big amount when they first went on sale. It's hovered around 15,000. Now you're starting to do the buildup and the TV is like, this feels like a big show. And now you're getting those announcements. Is that going to be reflected? But like, I would hope that you have that confidence level that we are putting together a product. Our core audience seems to be responding well. We need to have faith that this is going to generate results, and it might not be overnight. It does take a long time to change habits of people and to kind of curb that momentum shift. Like, it's very hard when you're in a kind of a downward trend and trying to pull a U-turn on that. But I would say, like, this is like, Dynamite has been as consistent a show as any wrestling show has been this year.
It starts with the satisfying the hardcores, and then from that on you'll get everybody else, you know, hopefully. So I think they're on a great track.
We're going to say goodbye to everyone on the YouTube channel, but we're continuing on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We've got feedback to get to, and we will talk about the season finale of Dark Side of the Ring, Becoming Muhammad Hassan. So that is all coming up,
featuring John Pollock,
apparently. So we'll talk about that, and we're back on Thursday with Rewind Away, chatting the night the line was crossed. Featuring the Sandman, Tommy Dreamer in suspenders, Joey Styles with his audio in and out throughout the 2-hour and 7-minute broadcast, and Terry Funk, Sabu, and Shane Douglas for the ECW title. What a show this is to discuss.
I'm looking forward to chatting about it.
All right. We're moving over to the cafe. Thanks to everyone here on the YouTube channel.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.